Comic Bento is the original graphic novel subscription box. Each Comic Bento contains at least $50 worth of surprise graphic novels from both the biggest creators in comics and unsung indie heroes. Plans start as low as $17.50 a month, plus shipping and handling, and brings you a new theme each month with the new graphic novels to go along with it. Head on over to www.comicbento.com to check out pricing, unboxing videos, and more. Subscribers can use the promo code SPOILERS, all in capital letters, to save $5 off on all new subscriptions.
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for Very Important People, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course spoilers, and goes into detail about the topics discussed. So, if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items they talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, we're turning stately spoilers matter into a giant mud pack. Batman versus Clayface, Clayface, Clayface!
And
plus
Clayface.
Silent Bob, Clayface 2. Man, I forgot about Clayface. Silent Bob goes to Central City, Vixen returns to the Berlantosphere, and Marvel prepares for Civil War 2. Plus news, reviews, our sparkling personalities, and pop culture madness combining into a megazord of podcast awesome. So sit down, hush up, hold on, and enjoy, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 659 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing this podcast with a friend and listening. And thank you, everyone, who purchased Rodrigo's new book, The Tale of Tallest Rabbit, through the Amazon link over at majorspoilers.com. Every time you make a purchase through that link, a little bit comes back our way. And in the case of this, you're sending Rodrigo up the charts, man.
Wow. Yeah.
As of this recording, on the first day of sales, Rodrigo, and this is all books being sold through Amazon, he now has a bestseller rank of number 513 in regular books, and that's all books at Amazon, and that's as of this recording. And he's number 9 in the fairy tales, folk tales, and myths category under children's books. So you are almost number 1 there. Congratulations, man!
Yeah, this has gone very well. So thanks to everyone who's gone out and purchased the book, and of course thanks to you guys for plugging it. And I think actually in the UK and Canada, I'm actually doing even better.
Whoa.
Nice.
Very cool.
I'm big,
go,
I'm
UK
big Toronto.
Germans love David Hasselhoff. Canadians love Rodrigo Lopez.
Actually, if you look at the list of my Twitter followers, they kind of do.
Yep.
You know who Canadians also love?
Who that?
Ashley Victoria Robinson.
That's right.
This week was your great Red Shirt Diaries episode that has you altering dimensions in time.
City on the Edge of Forever, baby.
That is the, and I say this every week, this is the best episode.
This is the best episode.
It is fantastic.
Although I'll be interested, next week's episode, we do something very different tonally. So I think of them as companion episodes.
All right, cool. Everybody can go check that out. Red Shirt Diaries, you can find it over at majorspoilers.com, or you can go over to youtube.com/JAWIIN and subscribe there so that you can get all of their goodness when it comes out. You've got more videos coming up. Are you still doing Supergirl?
I am. Our technical difficulties are over, so when Supergirl comes back next week, we will have a double-sized Girl on Supergirl episode, and then a mysterious new show the day after that.
I caught up on Supergirl this week.
Yeah.
And I rather liked it. I cannot wait. There's a white Martian coming to Supergirl
in a couple of weeks. In the next episode, I believe.
Is it next episode? I thought it was Toy Man first and then white Martian.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. In two weeks.
Yeah. So it's going to be pretty cool. And Matthew, I cannot wait for you and I to get back to doing our flashback podcast that we do over at the members only site at members.majorspoilers.com.
Right.
I think the back half of the second season is going to be interesting because word broke this weekend. Kevin Smith going to be directing an episode of The Flash.
Holy moly.
Now, there's no word on what episode it is, who the villains are, or anything like this. All we know is that the episode that Kevin Smith will be directing will be scheduled to air in May, which is right around the time of the season finale. And a lot of people are both excited and disappointed in this news.
Why would you be disappointed by that?
I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith. I like him a lot. If anyone has seen his 2007 pilot episode of Reaper, it was the best episode of the entire series. And that's saying a lot because that was a good, funny show. But his first pilot episode was fantastic. And so if he brings – and he's super passionate about DC Comics. He does the Fat Man on Batman podcast. I think he's going to love doing The Flash and be super, super – oh, what if, Matthew? Here's the other rumor I've heard.
Uh-oh.
I've heard guess who's coming in the back half of the season.
Who?
The Turtle.
Ooh.
What if Kevin Smith plays the turtle in the episode that he's directing?
Okay, so imagine the turtle leaning on the quick stop while Gorilla Grodd raps, Noich, Noich, Noich. Come on. Come on. It writes itself.
Bunch of savages in Central City.
Exactly.
I think where some of the consternation is coming from is that if you do listen to Fatman on Batman, and he only started watching Flash and like, you know, caring about it, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, a couple weeks ago. And because he's a celebrity and because he put it out there, it kind of seems like it was a very easy job for him to get. And like WB has a writer's program and has a director's program, and it seems like that's their farm of people to pull from. And I think that's where some people are like not terribly pleased about Kevin Smith, even though he'll probably do a great job.
Yeah,
you can see that. I mean, if somebody seems like they're jumping the line due to their notoriety, it could definitely be, it could be something that would be upsetting. I feel like as far as his directing chops go, the stuff that he's, especially the recent stuff he's put together, has been visually stunning. Red State is a terrifying movie, and there are some really great visuals in that movie that I think would almost fit the super speed motif. You know, you have the really, really fast cuts and the weird stuff and the death and the hate in the face, and then, you know.
Well, I think it's – he's, though, been kind of super chummy with Warner Brothers for a couple of years now. It seemed like he kind of had distanced himself from that, and he kind of went into the Fat Man on Batman series kind of a little, I'm going to be real hesitant, and I'm going to be real careful where I tread. And then suddenly he's like, hey, I'm going to host this panel at a Comic-Con about, you know, not necessarily the San Diego one, but he was popping up on weird panels with, like, Jim Lee and stuff. And so it was, like, very strange to see him suddenly become super chummy with Warner Brothers and DC. So I'm wondering if that didn't carry forward a little bit more. And I'm wondering, Ashley, if he wasn't approached first to say, hey, would you be interested in The Flash? Then he started watching it and was like, oh, this is awesome. Of course I would love to do something like this.
I mean, that's probably very likely because the whole docket of directors is chosen well in advance of a couple weeks, you know, or even a month before the episode's going to air. But I mean, if you're outside of that and you're experiencing the chronology of like listening to the podcast and then the TCA is coming out announcing this, like I see how people would see that and then be like, wow, it must be nice to be famous. You know, that whole idea of that.
Oh yeah. I think maybe we should have released our Flashback podcast to the wild instead of just making it exclusive for our VIPs, Matthew, because maybe they would incorporate some of our stories into the show. Because I've been saying how long, Matthew, I've said, oh, I cannot wait till the turtle shows up. And you're like, no, the turtle would be a horrible idea. And now I hear the turtle is coming. Idea.
It's like, well. I just imagine like Matthew and Steven's ideas being like that episode of Third Rock from the Sun where like Harry and Tommy write the X-Files. They just kill everybody at the end.
No, I with the 1-2-3 motif that kept popping up in the first season, I kept saying, oh, my God, we are getting the Flash of Two Worlds. The Flash of Two Worlds is coming, everyone. And then sure enough.
It's not a motif if you're dividing 6 by 9 and getting 1-2-3.
No, I mean, literally, if you watch that first season, 1-2-3 is everywhere in that first
season. It's the golden ratio.
It's season 1, episode 2, and there's 3 villains in it, dude.
There's this Avogadro's number in The Flash.
Yep. He's running exactly at Mach 1, Mach 2, Mach 3. Oh, my God. This means something.
Yes, it means 1, 2, 3. It's a series of sequential numbers.
It's a match. So is there anybody not excited about Kevin Smith to direct The Flash?
Oh, sure.
Nobody? Matt, Rodrigo?
Somebody in the director's program.
Well, yeah, besides someone who's not on the show, yes.
That's an interesting question because I'm not watching The Flash. So I suppose you could say that I'm not interested in this news or not excited about these news, but it's only because I'm not watching The Flash, not because I have anything against Kevin Smith or The Flash. What are Kevin Smith's like TV credits? What has he done aside from that for pilot?
Reaper is basically the only one, and then there was a segment from a documentary that he's done for television. And if I remember correctly, he was doing a daily morning show with his wife right around the same time that Reaper pilot was coming out. Mm-hmm. I think.
He's also done some spots on like late night TV where he's kind of like a reporter. Yeah.
And he's directed a couple of commercials for television as well, especially for the Marvel's Avengers one. There was a great one with going to the school of Stan Lee, where Stan Lee.
Yeah, that was last year?
Yeah. He directed that one, and it was like him and Jason Mewes and the guy from Mallrats, who's also in The Walking Dead, and Stan Lee, and it was like How to Act Like Stan Lee or something like that. It was a good commercial. So he's done little bits and piece things, but most of his stuff has been movie work.
Cool.
Yeah. So let's stay with the DC route for just one moment. During the TCAs, this is the Television Critics Association press junket that they had over the weekend, they announced that Vixen, the animated series, is coming back for a second season on the CW Seed, which is their online thing. I watched about half of the first season, and I know they're very short, but the problem is it was online, and unless I had it in my reader at some point, I was always missing out on it. You can still go see it, but it was strong enough that they're bringing it back for the second season, and they did say that Megalyn Ichikawoke, is going to appear live action in an upcoming episode of The Flash or The Arrow this season.
That is going to be so cool.
I think it will be too, cool. Because the animated show takes place in the Arrowverse. And in fact, the very first episode of Vixen has The Flash and Arrow both talking to her and about her in that first episode. So
are they voiced by Stephen Amell?
They are.
That's cool.
Yes, it is very cool. So I'm kind of interested in this.
I'd be more interested in live action Vixen, to be honest. I want more of that. But yeah, I like the fact that first of all, that they're doing animation at all. I love an animated series. You gotta love your cartoon type superhero guys.
Well, here's what they said about a live action version of Vixen. When he was asked, the president, Pedowitz, said, "At this moment, no. But at this moment, last time, legends really didn't exist. Time will take its toll. There will be a moment in time, I don't know when it's going to come, but when Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg and Mark Guggenheim say we think it's time, we're going to give them the opportunity to do just that." So it makes it sound like CW is more than welcoming a live-action version of Vixen if they want to do it.
Well, he did say in the next breath that he didn't think the CW was ready for a female-led superhero show, which I think was kind of an unfortunate comment.
Yeah.
And maybe a shot at Supergirl, but...
Well, and they still haven't ruled out. Now the rumors are flying again that there still might be an opportunity to do the Supergirl-Flash crossover this season. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
It'd be cool.
I am disappointed. Maybe CW will pick up where TNT dropped the ball, and they said that they're no longer going to be developing the Teen Titans series over at TNT.
Yeah, so you know Roe Harper's going to show back up on Arrow any second now.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it? Would you guys like to see, Teen Titans fall somewhere else? Or Titans, I guess, is what it's called.
I do not if I get to play Raven.
Not based on the treatment they've been using. I would love to see Teen Titans, but I'm old. I want Wolfman Perez Titans. I want your Cyborg and your Beast Boy and your Wonder Girl and your Kid Flash and your Robin.
I agree.
I don't think they're going to do that.
You wouldn't want Nightwing and Starfire and Raven?
Starfire and Raven I'm fine with. I don't want Nightwing.
They're not getting Nightwing in 1,000 years. No way. They've been trying to get Nightwing for Arrow since Arrow started with all the Bloodhaven drops. Like, you know all those characters are tied up.
I don't want Nightwing in any case because, and this is just me talking, In the year 2005, DC editorial made it clear that they don't have any way to make Nightwing interesting to them because they can't make him grow up to be Batman and they can't run him back down to Robin. So he is eternally going to be in that neither realm with the Legion of Superheroes and all the other properties that the current editorial people just don't know what to do with. So I don't want Nightwing. I want Teen Titans. I want Robin. I want the actual, you know, bits and pieces. Even if it's something where it's not Robin, but it's a reasonable facsimile thereof, somebody who holds that Robin role in a story with, you know, your Changeling and your Raven and your Starfire and your Cyborg, that's fine. I just don't want Nightwing because I feel like Nightwing is kind of a 23-year-old version of Robin and not necessarily the teen version that I wanted. So, you know.
I agree with you. I would like to see something that's very serious like the Perez Wolfman stuff was. But I don't know. It seems like everybody wants to make it a little bit more lighter, like what we see in. And not, I'm not saying the Arrow isn't light because the mid-season finale, holy crap. But I think they just want to go in a different direction and try to hit a broader audience, which is why they said that they were dropping it. But my goodness, I would think that would be a home run. My youngest son has started watching the Teen Titans cartoon, and he cannot stop talking about the Teen Titans. So I know that there is a not just funny Teen Titans, but I know that there's this market for good Teen Titans / Titan stuff, whichever direction they want to go.
There is, but the problem is that they, you know, kind of in a broad sense, they don't really commit to the tone of the Teen Titans, right? Mm-hmm. You have Teen Titans, then they get downgraded to Teen Titans Go because Young Justice is coming out, which is the same characters with a different tone. And, you know, I mean, that always happens. It's kind of like what happens over at like Marvel's TV stuff where you have like 17 Avengers series coming out in rapid succession, and they're all tonally different. They're all like, none of the continuity is the same, except they are like picking and choosing stuff from the movies. It's just kind of all over the place. And, you know, the Titans have suffered for it.
Yeah.
In the same way that they won't touch the Legion of Superheroes with a 10-foot pole, they actually just keep messing with the Teen Titans, and, you know, they just never really commit.
Well, they have literally changed the timeline and ganked a founding new Teen Titan for use in the Justice League with Cyborg because,
yeah, but
again,
it's a good move for diversity.
Sure, it's a good move for Cyborg, too. But what it indicates is
they're going up to the majors.
Exactly. Teen Titans.
That's our boy.
Teen Titans is a lower tier property for them. They are fine permanently and completely flummoxing Teen Titans in order to have that boost in Justice League, which, again, don't get me wrong, I love Cyborg. I want Cyborg to be Superman in terms of his profile and visibility.
Sure.
But, you know, it's something where they're willing to cannibalize one property for the strength of another one, which, again, you know, you're editorial, it's your IP, you got to do that sometimes. But it seems to me that they've been half-stepping on Teen Titans. You realize now that there's a limited series coming out right now, Titans Hunt, which is retroactively returning the Teen Titans to continuity because they were actually – it is good. But the Teen Titans were actually erased from continuity by the Flashpoint retcon because, as I said before, editorial doesn't know what to do with those in-between teen characters. They're not kids. They can't graduate into the Justice League because – then they'd have to move somebody out of the Justice League. And the universe has only been around for 5 years anyway. So, you know, it's one of those properties that's been in flux for the last at least 15 years, maybe even longer if you read Teen Titans comics. So a definitive TV or movie version would be great, but I think it will be a redefined movie or TV version. And I don't think that what TNT was trying to do was entirely tenable. And I think that's part of the reason why the show's gotten, you know, not picked up the way they announced.
And I also think that it's because we never knew in the Titans TV show who the characters were, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem is, well, we want to use a Kid Flash. Yeah, but we got Flash over at CW, so no. Oh, we want to use Robin. Nope, that's a Batman thing.
And
we want to use Cyborg. Oh, sorry, Justice League.
That is the thing about Teen Titans. It is a fundamentally problematic property when everything is chopped up in between different production companies or distributors or whatever.
And that's why if they could have kept it all with like a Berlanti Productions thing, it's just the it's just distributed to a different channel. It's not necessarily a, it doesn't have to be a whole different universe.
I think it does though, because I mean, as far as I can tell, Supergirl, for whatever they say about wanting to do a crossover, the fact that Superman exists in that world is incredibly problematic for Arrow and Flash.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Unless Superman's too busy on the East Coast, and since they're on the West Coast, they get away with stuff. I Superman turns a blind eye.
He'll IM them. As well.
Get into it. It's already like the fact that Superman's around is already problematic within Supergirl.
I'm wondering
within Flash and Arrow.
I'm wondering if we're not going to see Henry Cavill show up in like the season finale of this first season.
No way.
You don't think so?
Not in 100,000 years. I do not think so. I think they'll pay that male model who they put the Superman suit on.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any universe where you get any movie crossover. Mm. Absolutely not.
I don't think that Supergirl can exist in the universe that is building into Dawn of Justice and Batman v Superman and all like that. I don't feel like tonally or the what's the word that I'm looking for that's not tone? It's not the same world. It can't be the same world. If you've seen the teasers for Batman v Superman, that cannot exist in the same universe that Supergirl is flipping around National City and being awesome.
Yes, that's what you would say if you were someone who cares and analyzes the tone of things. If you were someone who was in the business of cashing in on stuffs, then maybe you wouldn't consider it that way. There are a lot. I mean, that is my fundamental argument for any time there's a Star Trek and X-Men teaming up comic and a Star Trek and like Green Lantern comic. I was like, these guys don't make sense together, but people love them anyway. And you know, it's like maybe that's a smaller offense, but that stuff never stops anyone. People love crossovers.
Right.
I just don't think like Henry Cavill did TV for a long time and he hasn't gone back to it since he started becoming a movie star. Like, I don't think you could pay him enough money to be on that show.
Stock footage.
You know, I don't know. I just know that we see a lot of stars are starting to, you know, movie stars are like, you know what? Television isn't such a bad place after all, especially
but
when it comes to
networks. It's all in your HBO and your AMCs and
or Amazon.
It's just a thought after Netflix. watching the most recent Supergirl with Clark and Kara having their conversation via the instant message again. I'm like, man, they are certainly. I mean, we know we've seen him in Shadow and Sunflares and everything, but man, they are just really setting this up to be like, let me just show up real quick and we can team up together against all these Kryptonians.
Maybe it's Tom Welling. Maybe it's not the
he's actually dead.
Because he's a blur, right?
Tom Welling is dead.
Happening. He was being
blur. Tom Welling would be interesting, although I think he has said he has zero interest in being in that show because he's too busy behind the scenes doing everything that he's doing there. So
we'll
get his brother.
He is he's producing and directing some stuff.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. I'd have to look it up real quick.
I legitimately thought he had done nothing since Smallville. So there you
no,
go.
No, no. He's actually, he's kind of like, Matthew and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about the kids from Head of the Class and how they've basically taken over kids programming and how one of them is the producer of Smallville. And I think Tom Welling has kind of done the same thing. He's gone behind the scenes and has become a producer and director of some stuff.
You can make more money for a lot less work. So.
Yeah. He was working on Hellcats. He was working on, I saw him just a news story just the other day where he was working on something behind the scenes. But he's got a couple of movies coming up. He's got Parkland, Draft Day, which was in 2014. Mm-hmm. And then The Choice, which is completed, it says, for 2016. Mm. So before everybody goes, man, all you guys talk about is DC, you DC fanboys, blah, 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 blah. The Knights of the Golden Circle are rising again, and Civil War II is just around the corner.
Yeah.
Okay. So nobody knows.
This is not a good
nobody knows what the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Shoot down my thought. People thinking that I'm a DC over Marvel fanboy is all I'm saying.
Oh, we know that you're a Marvel fan. Is that what you're saying?
I'm a fan. I'm a comics fan.
He's saying if you're going to hold up a story, he's like, let's talk about Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Well,
now.
let us talk about Marvel because this is kind of a big thing. They have announced that they are coming in with a Civil War II, hero against hero, because if it worked one time, it'll work another time.
Yeah, right, just like the movie, Secret Wars,
the same name.
Yep. So what do we know about this? I know a couple of things, but what do you guys know?
I know what the article said.
Basically, Brian Michael Bendis. Apparently, there's... And then if you're hearing the rumors, apparently this time it's Tony using someone who can see the future to basically preempt crime. So they're doing a
Minority Report type thing.
And a couple of heroes, including Captain Marvel, find out about this and say, no, you shouldn't be doing this. And he's like, yes, I should be doing this. And biff, pam, boom, pow, somebody's going to die.
For a while.
I would hope that instead of doing Civil War II, they would have just moved on to the next American conflict and done like War of 1812. And
yeah, exactly, right?
There you go.
Hey, I like that one. We win in that one.
The Canadians, yes.
And then you can use Earth 1812, which I think is the one where Iron Man is.
Well, they already did, what was it, 18, was it 1867? 1862 or whatever it was.
It was like 14 something.
No, they did 1601, but then they did one during.
They did the cowboy one, yeah.
Yeah, they did the cowboy one during Secret Wars. I think it was. What year was.
1862.
I think it was 1862, yeah.
Yeah, and then Mark Miller did what, like X-Men 85? So.
Yep.
And X-Men 92. And
That's why, yeah.
Just walk away.
It's now time for Civil War 2.
Mark Miller did 1985, though. Yeah,
Is this something that. I mean, for those of you who are fans of Marvel stuff, do you want to see another big hero versus hero fight?
I mean, for me, it's like Civil War was interesting. I was interested in what was going on during the first Marvel Civil War. But there's just something about even just calling it Civil War 2. It's just like, it just comes across with so little punch. It's like, there's this article, I think on Marvel.com, that is like, in 2006, Mark Miller and Steve McNiven blew up the universe with Civil War. Now we're doing it again with two different guys and a different story. It's just like, I don't know. There's just kind of very little to be interested about. And the first thing that's uninteresting about it is just the title.
I think I guess the problem that I have is I have a bigger problem with the title, only because it seems like we just got done with Secret Wars. That was a huge Marvel thing back in the day. Civil War, when it came out, was a huge thing for Marvel back, 10 years ago. And now it's just like, well, let's repeat the same thing again and again and again. And let's try to capture that lightning one more time. And it just seems like every time they do, it's weaker and weaker and weaker.
Well, and they're constantly doing that. I mean, you just said, didn't we just roll out of Secret Wars? That was off of Secret War. And then there was Secret Wars 2, you know?
It's now just there's a book called Secret Wars 2.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so obnoxious. It's like DC using the word crisis.
Yeah, repeatedly. The problem that I have with Civil War 2 is that Marvel has for a long time been locked in a cycle of massive inter-crossover events. And if you read between the lines of this, this is like, remember when we did this and it was awesome? And I'm like, I remember when you did this and it started out awesome. And then it melted down because, like every other pitch, we have this great sort of thing that ties into larger real-world events. But when we get right down to it, what it comes to is, and then they fight.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
If you think about Civil War, not Secret War, Civil War did several large things, all of which have been undone. They unmasked Spider-Man, rather. They killed Captain America. They turned Iron Man into a totalitarian douche, and they basically tried to militarize the superheroes of the Marvel Universe. And all that lasted about 4 years. It's all been reversed, retconned, and taken away. And the way this thing is written is literally saying, hey, remember when we did all this stuff that actually we undid immediately afterwards? We're going to totally do it again, you guys.
Well, and then, you know, to complicate things, Marvel released a teaser today, which I'm going to bet we find out about next week, since that's when the solicitations will probably drop. Dead No More is the teaser.
Wolverine.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. It's a Wolverine thing.
Like, we all didn't see that coming.
Yeah, with a Wolverine movie just around the corner, right?
It's like depowering Spider-Man or Superman. Like, they've done it so many times now that it's kind of impossible to do it and then have it matter and then bring it back and have me care.
What it comes down to is the approach, the actual story, whatever Bendis is going to do, because essentially this is one of those things where, okay, you guys, we're giving you this and you kind of know what's going to happen, but the real fun is going to be in the character work getting to the point where that comes together. So if you're someone who's reading, and don't get me wrong, Bendis's Iron Man is actually a pretty good book. I'm enjoying the first, I think, 5 issues that have been out. But it's really going to come down to, how are we going to do this in a way that, first of all, ties into that big Captain America movie, which also, I think, has Civil War in its title.
Yep.
And do something that isn't exactly like the last time. So I predict this is going to sell millions and millions of comics.
This time, I think I know who one of the characters is that's going to die and why Iron Man is all upset about it.
Who do you think they're going to kill?
War Machine.
You think they're going to kill War Machine?
Yeah. Why, you killed my best friend.
I thought War Machine was an Avenger in the movies now.
I don't know.
Oh, he's yeah,
like,
he
he's
is.
Like a reserve, quote, pseudo new Avenger. Because nobody ever said Avengers Assemble.
That's who I think they're going to kill in the Civil War II thing. So.
You don't think they're going to kill the guy they killed in the book?
Not in the book. In the movie, yes. In the movie, yes. I think Captain America is.
But you don't think they're going to do it in the new book?
No. No.
No, they've done that. But also, I don't think they've re-de-aged him. I think Steve Rogers is still 85 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's not actually Captain America right now. Sam Wilson
Sam is
Captain
America.
Yep.
In retrospect, I think what was real genius about the first Civil War is that, unlike almost every other event, which then fizzles out and undoes itself, it ended up in a real, like, okay, we are about to make a decision about the Civil War. And then they dropped the Hulk on everyone, which was like the best, most terrible, most ridiculous Deus Ex Machina way to end a major event.
Oh, yeah. To have him just suddenly disrupt everything. Right?
So smart. It's like, they're like, okay, we have made a decision about this. Oh, no, the Hulk.
Yeah, that actually was not a bad idea.
Yeah, it was really smart.
But it's almost like,
from a, like, oh, we've written ourselves into 1,000 corners. Yes. How do we?
Yes.
Oh, let's have a break.
Yeah. Interesting. Civil War is so complex. It would be hard for us to do that in one episode, to review the original Civil War, because there's so many spin out stuff. The whole Spider-Man stuff is its own discussion.
And the core Civil War book is actually really more of a spine, a skeleton which to hang whatever issues you choose to read.
Well, they did that with the Skrull of Invasion. They did that with the Skrull one. Yeah. Okay, everybody. You can find these stories and a whole lot more over at majorspoilers.com.
.com,
indeed. Not .net, although, well, just use .com. Let us do some reviews.
Reviews.
This week, I am taking a look at The Legend of Wonder Woman #1. This is from DC Comics. This is the print version. This is out this week. This is the print version of the Digital First comic. And this one kind of tells the story of a young Diana as she's growing up on Themyscira. And this first issue focuses on how Queen Hippolyta just really, really, really wanted this child so much that essentially the island birthed Wonder Woman, or Diana. And the struggle that Diana has between the possibility of becoming an immortal and ruling as the queen of the island, of the queen of the Amazons, and this notion that there's something fundamentally wrong in the world, and if I don't learn how to become a warrior, I'm not going to be able to protect my people. And so this first issue really just kind of leads up to her realization that I have to learn how to fight, and being accepted to become a warrior behind her mother's back. It's very fascinating because, you know, normally we see, when we're getting the Wonder Woman story, we see Hippolyta wanted a child so bad that she made her out of clay. And then she was raised as one of the Amazonians. And then she disguised herself and got in a fight and went out into the world to become the champion of the Amazons. You don't ever find out what goes on in between those years. And that's what I think is so fascinating about this. Not because this is the question that nobody asked, but you're giving it to us anyway. It's not that way. because it is showing the growth of this character and how she comes out when she does arrive in the land of man, how she comes out with her thought process. And I think it's very well written from that standpoint.
Would you say so far it's been successful in that regard?
I think it has been. I think it really is. And again, we're looking at four digital versions or one first issue, and it's done very, very well.
That's interesting, because Wonder Woman, when Wonder Woman arrives on the scene the thousand times that she's been rewritten, she always has like a very specific attitude. And I would imagine it's very difficult to arrive at that organically.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it will. I mean, I think they're trying it here. I mean, right mm-hmm. now she is as a young child, and she's not 16 yet. So she is probably 9 or 10. And she is, just coming to this idea. And I think probably because of her connection to the island that there's something wrong. And of course that's the, allegory to something bigger going on out there in the rest of the world. And so I think that that's how they're kind of making these connections between her conflict as mm-hmm. someone who is supposed to be royalty, but really wants to not only be smart, but also be a warrior, and her future destination. So I think they're working it really well. This is a 9-issue miniseries. So it's got a ways to go, but so far it's really great. And the art by Ray Dillon is fantastic. I mean, he's doing some fantastic stuff in this that I'm just amazed at. So if you get a chance to pick it up, go ahead and pick it up. If you're in the digital world, you're probably issue 2 is probably almost complete over on Comixology. But I really like The Legend of Wonder Woman #1. I'm giving it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. I just got a kick out of it. So there you go.
Nice.
Matthew, you're diving under the hood this week. The Black Hood.
The Black Hood. It's actually out today. From Archie Comics, Black Hood #8. The Archie MLJ heroes are kind of sentimental favorites of mine, partly because when I was very young and started reading comics, there was the Red Circle Archie revival. Then I got heavily into comics in college, and there was the Impact Comics revival. And then a couple of years ago, DC did an Archie Comics revival. And I think what we're really showing is that they're not sticking. But the last run of Archie books under the Dark Circle imprint really, I feel like, have a chance of sticking. Black Hood, I think, was the first of those. And it is the story of
the Black Hood,
who is a vigilante, but not like a Batman-type vigilante. This is very grounded, very down to earth. Very much he's getting the snot kicked out of him in this issue. Down to earth. And basically, this issue got me by referencing one word that is important to Archie MLJ fanatics, and that word is crusaders. So if you know what crusaders means in history, first of all, hooray, you get to be part of my secret club. And secondly, it's not that. this story is actually part 2 of the Crusaders arc. This is something entirely different, written by Dwayne Swierczynski. Art by Robert Hack. And by the way, I do love me some Robert Hack. I think he also does Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. But that's not at all relevant here. This is a dark book. This is an adult book. This is a gritty book in the way that Charles Bronson's Death Wish was gritty. And it really feels a little bit like you can't really not reference Batman, you know, Batman #1, the really, really early adventures where he's running around in the jacket. In this issue, Black Hood only escapes a fight because he manages to maneuver the guy who's trying to beat him to death with a baseball bat into a corner where he can't use the bat effectively. Then when he finally escapes from being beaten by these other vigilantes, the Crusaders, he finds that somebody stole his motorcycle. And they're apparently chopping it for parts. Meanwhile, in his day job, the Black Hood is actually a police officer who has to account for what happened to his motorcycle. It's really interesting stuff on one level because it kind of drills down into that, what would a superhero be like if it were actually in the real world? but it's not quite to the level where it's the minutia of how do you fix a run in your tights. It stops just short of that level of almost anal realism and gives you more of a kind of a crazy man's life. That you get a glimpse into the mind of a vigilante, and it's clear that he is not all there. And this issue actually ends with a pretty impressive cliffhanger, which sadly means I'm going to be back on Black Hood next month. I missed an issue and was like, oh, am I not reading Black Hood anymore? And I picked this up and went, no, I still am. Three slices of meatloaf for Black Hood number 8. There's conspiracies and wheels within wheels and violent violences and something really terrible in the back of a truck. Mm. I don't know what it is, but it is very dark. It is very almost nihilistic. It's Gotham City, only without all the crazy colorful guys. It's just evil guys who want to kill you. And I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
So there you got that going for you.
Thank you for that, Matthew. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about why we haven't seen Afterlife with Archie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting some weird vibes from the PR people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that Sakasa, Aguirre Sakasa, I think, I don't know how to say his name, Sakasa.
I say Aguirre.
Aguirre Sakasa. Yeah. We know that he's the chief creative officer over at Archie, but he's also mm-hmm. been writing for the Supergirl TV series.
That's true.
Has he?
Yes. And so I'm wondering if...
I think he's a... Is he a producer on it as well?
I was looking to see. Yeah, he's also a producer on the show too. So,
oh,
I'm wondering if his time is being split too much between television and CCOs to get back onto that project.
Mm.
Just a thought. But you had mentioned Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and that triggered that
right.
that credit that I remember seeing on Supergirl last week.
Yeah, it's written by Aguirre Sacasa and drawn by Robert Hack. It's really good.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Rodrigo, let us get to you.
Yeah. So I picked up the latest Dark Horse Presents, which is number 18, volume 3, I want to say. I don't know. But it's the number 18. You know, it's kind of hard to review anthology series, so I'll just say this. Sandy and Mandy is like super weird. It's like really weird, but it's usually been weird in a good way. And this time it left me feeling pretty cold. It's like they made some jokes about diabetes, and it's like a weird comic with a weird point of view. So it's like a lot of the times, like what? It's like if there's no frame of reference, if there's no frame of reference about what the artist is saying, it's literally 100% of the characters. Have this like weird way of looking at things. It's hard to tell when somebody is like, I'm making a joke about diabetes to make fun of people who make jokes about diabetes, or if it's actually just a joke about diabetes, you know? Yeah, it's it kind of stopped me in my tracks while I was reading it. Right before it, they did a Sister Wives joke, and I'm like, all right, I'm on board. I think I get what you're saying about this. And then they did that, and it was just so weird. That said, there is a number 3, maybe 5 of Alien Jungle Girl, which is a lot of fun. It's very purple. It's a very purple comic. I'm into it. altogether, I'm going to give it 3 slices of meatloaf because altogether, it's pretty good. It's exactly what you want out of an anthology series. You jump into a random issue and you have no idea what's going on with anything, but it gives you that incentive to go back and pick up the previous one. So yeah, Dark Horse Presents number 18. I'll give it 3 slices of meatloaf.
Cool. And Ashley, you have something for us this week. Who is this from?
This is from Vertigo.
Ah, Vertigo, okay.
Yeah, New Romancer number 2, which is out next week, written by Peter Milligan with art by Brett Parson. I really like this book. Peter Milligan speaks to my 19-year-old English major self of the past. in this issue, you get to see more of the effect that the Lord Byron Gollum Coombe zombie is having on the world. And you get some glimpses into Lexi's past that lead you to see not only why she's kind of this like weird loner chick who likes reading romantic poetry, but why She's also smart, like hyper intelligent enough to be able to code a program that would so accurately represent someone that it could imprint their personality into a corpse. There's not a lot that I can really say about it without spoiling like the backstory aspects, but it's really good. And this issue really sinks its teeth into who these characters are instead of just the cute, jokey dialogue that we had a lot in the first issue. You also get to see more about Casanova and how extreme they're taking this character. I really like it, but if I were writing it, I would have made it Keats because Lord Byron's a jerk. And he spends a lot of this issue being a jerk. And so my only issue with this issue is that I don't understand why Lexi puts up with Byron's crap. Like, whether or not he's her idol from childhood, he treats her like garbage and she still ferries him around. Granted, it's like she's half trying to get him to seduce this lady so that everything doesn't go terribly wrong. But she's mostly just like taking his crap. And, you know, if you're going to have a female be your lead, they should be strong and capable. So it was almost a perfect issue. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 because I think that the world that Milligan is building is really, really interesting. Brett Parsons' art looks amazing. And I'm excited to see more. So you should pick that up next week from Vertigo Comics.
On the 20th?
I think so. Is that a week from today?
Yep, that would be
I don't math very well.
No, that's cool. I just know because DC has been sending us a couple of stuff in advance, so that's why I just wanted to clarify on that.
There you go.
All right.
This comic is new NEW Romancer, right? Because I think Matthew did the first issue, and I think we got a couple comments on the show where people are like, "Oh, it's not New Romancer," because they're like, "Why is right. there? Why is there like cyber? Why is there all this stuff happening on my cyberpunk adaptation?" You know.
Yes, that is correct. NEW.
Cool. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you, Matthew. And listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com and you can check out more reviews at the site. You can also check out the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week. This week, we're asking you, which do you like more, action figures or statues? Rodrigo?
Oh, that's interesting. I think that I like action figures better just because of how posable they are. And I know that some statues do give you some options as far as, like, you know, popping out a hand. Yeah, exactly. So I get that. And I get that the statuette market kind of going for that a little bit more. I think there's real pros and cons. I mean, this is something that I'd be kind of torn about because, you know, it's like statues look nice. You know, action figures with all their posability have like random holes where there's like a little silver ball bearing that you can see, you know, and if there aren't, then that kind of means they're not as posable. So, you know, it's like if you want a Spider-Man that looks like he's doing cool Spider-Man things, it's like you have to get one that's doing a very specific Spider-Man thing, or one that is made out of spheres that are connected by, you know, muscly looking arms and legs and stuff. So I'll go with action figures, but I'm pretty much on the line.
Ashley, what about you?
I feel like I like them for different things, which I think is like a crappy answer. I like statuary to put around my desk. So like, cause they're all really pretty and, you know, ideally inspirational, but I own like 150 times more action figures than statues. So yeah. I feel like I have to own that. Also, the price point on action figures is a lot more what I'm looking for.
right.
You know, like for $20, you can get a pretty mean looking Daredevil.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do have a Spider-Man that has a lot of points of articulation in the hands, which is cool that they made it, but it's also like, his hands are always limp now because the nuts and bolts are really loose and it looks kind of weird. But I think you get more variety out of your action figures. And as someone who obsessively collects a single character, action figures do me good. So I'm going to go with action figures as well.
You know, I agree with you on the action figure side. I've got certainly a lot more action figures than not, especially now that they're coming out with the 6-inch Batman Animated Universe stuff.
Oh yeah, I've got all of them so far.
I was
not
like,
even fair.
I was like, I'm going to stay away from these as far as I can because I don't need to go down that rabbit hole. And then I saw the giant man bat, and I was like, oh, I got to grab that. And then I was like, okay, let me start grabbing the other ones now. But I went with statues just because I think they do look cool. They do have cool poses. They look big. They do take up space, but they take up space in a good way. And actually, I think pretty up the room that they're in. So I went with statues. I like those better. Matthew, what about you?
The thing about a statue, aside from the fact that statues tend to be too big for my taste, and that statues tend to be too expensive for my taste, because, you know, I have no money. Statues have, actually, they're positive and they're negative. It's the same thing. The statue is a gorgeous static picture. A statue is like a really cool cover of Spider-Man leaping or Superman jumping, or generally, from what the statues I've seen, Deadpool going pew pew and slashy slashy. And you got your really great, especially if you get some of the really, really up-to-date designs or the really good sculpting. But I am currently sitting at my little desk, and my desk is actually portable. But on my desk next to my computer are action figures of Gokai Red, Dragon Ranger, the 5th, 6th, 10th Doctors, Chun-Li, and the Golden Age Flash. Or as I like to call them, wow, what a great super team. Mm-hmm. But the thing about them is if I get bored, I can move them, and I have this little stickum that I put on their feet so that they stand up in case the desk moves, and you can move them around. You can do a little bit of posability. And of course, on the other side of the room, I have 185 3-inch Power Ranger action figures, which, again, not as many points of articulation, but it's not the same experience every time. I feel like a statue is great for what it is, but the statue is like a cool cover, and the action figure is like maybe a book that you can read and have Spider-Man actually do stuff.
Well, and even that list, you know, you are bound to find a lot more variety of action figures. Like, I have an Orphan Maker action figure from Generation X. And if you don't know what that is, you are correct. You shouldn't know what that is.
You shouldn't. I haven't.
But there's a toy of it. There's an action figure of it. But there's not a statue of it.
I have an Aztec action figure. Didn't even pull 12 issues in 1994. Still Jason Inman's favorite superhero. But
that is a good series.
It's a great series. It's a great character. And he never gets any play anymore. But I, by gosh, have an action figure of him. Yeah, I know. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And I think that is another big heavy that Rodrigo pointed out, is there's more variety. I have a box full of the DC Universe select figures from the late 90s to into 2000. I have the first 10 issues or issues, the first 10 members of the Legion of Superheroes. And then, of course, I have the big collector's box that Steven gave me for my birthday one year that has Matter Eater Lad and Wildfire and Colossal Boy and
it's got
Brody.
Invisible Girl in it, too.
Got an Invisible Kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Invisible Girl.
Hey, Eric.
Do not cross the stream.
Eric says, I do have several action figures I quite like, but I much prefer statues. Although they cost more than action figures, they are more enduring. If I'm buying something as to what amounts to an art piece for the home, a statue looks so much better than a toy. Yeah. Tazul says, I buy a good amount of both, but the statues tend to display better in my opinion. Art guy Charlie says, I vote action figures. Statues tend to look a little better, but action figures are significantly more cost effective, tend to be more manageable size, and let you choose and change the character pose as you see fit. Justin says, I voted for action figures due to the Lego minifigures, because there was a question about, do minifigures count as action figures? And I'm like, yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Sidness says, I don't dislike statues. I just don't have room or the finance for them. Jeffrey says, I can't play with statues. Well, sure you can. And
pew pew.
So, all right, I got a question.
Okay.
Where would you place your Funko Pop vinyl things? Are they
action figures
or are they statues?
They're action figures.
I'd say they're statues.
Yeah, see? Because they have very limited posability. Like, they are basically
The head turns.
Or
their bobbles.
Okay, bobbles I'll buy.
So that they fall into the action figure category.
I don't feel like they're action figures.
Typically, when we talk statue, we're talking about something that's made out of a rigid material that only has the one pose. But like I said, if I can take Barry Allen's Pop Vinyl and turn his head, and then take Captain Cold and turn his head, and then in the middle put Cthulhu, then, you know, that's an action figure.
Well, there
what about your Disney Infinities?
Disney Infinities.
Ooh.
Those.
I buy them and I don't play the game. I just like the way they look.
Those fall under
those
the
have
same
to be statues, as, like, right?
No, they don't move. Nope.
Yeah, they don't
no
move at all.
No points of articulation.
HeroClix are tiny statues to me. I would say those are the same. And what are those things that Rob wanted to drive all over Salt Lake City looking for?
HeroClix?
Amiibos.
Skylanders?
Oh, Amiibos.
Amiibos. Kind of the same thing. They're tiny statues.
Sure, sure.
They do have really nice sculpts.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a statue. Big or small, statues are great. I just, you know.
And they do vary in price because Kotobukiya, you can get some of their statues for in the $50 range. And then
Their blue Nightwing is still $160.
Oh, yeah. And some of them are very expensive, yes. So I guess I know what I'm getting for you for Christmas.
Oh, my God. Don't admit it. It's so expensive.
And then, you know, they have some statues that are tens of thousands of dollars, like the life-size Hulk and Hulkbusters that they sell online from Japan. So, you know, I guess it just depends on where you sit. Matthew,
I sit on my couch.
Yeah, there you go. Matthew, where does the rest of the Major Spoilers Nation sit as of this recording?
Right now, 55% of respondents saying action figures, 45% statues, which is a total of 100%, which is good. 65 votes in the bag. Really, I kind of figured it would be, because the thing about a statue is the people who are into statues are way into statues.
Yeah, they're like variant people.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was really surprised by back when I worked in the store, was the statue market was relatively healthy, well, even at, you know, 55 and 75 and 100 bucks.
And from what I've seen on eBay, the secondary market, reselling mm-hmm. value, these things just go up, 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 up in price. I've got a couple of the Batman animated series maquettes from not the Justice League ones that they came out with, but the original maquettes that the Warner Brothers store sold. And even today, the Batman one, which I got at a bargain for $800 about 15 years ago, is still super high priced and continues to climb. So if you're looking for something that does have some resale value, providing you're not setting it out in direct sunlight, statues, I think, certainly have a much healthier resale value than action figures would.
You're playing with your statues and you leave them in the yard, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when they have a low print. Like there's a Fables one from, it's where the end of the first battle and Snow has her arms around Bigby's neck.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They made 500 of those statues. You can't find them for less than $400 online. Or like the Frank Quietly Batman Black and White.
Yep, I've got that one.
I got that one because of there was a chip out of the ear, so it was slightly damaged. It was the only one I could find for less than $300.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the DC, well, I shouldn't say DC, but anybody that's doing those kind of collectible statues, they make super low runs because people don't buy them or can't afford them because they are priced quite high. Those Batman Black and Whites, I think, start at $75 when you buy them new. But then because there's only 500 of them made or 300 of them made, or I think the Black and Whites, they make 5,200 of them.
They do now, yeah.
Yeah, they do. They escalate in price so quickly. All right, everybody. Head over to MajorSpoilers.com. Cast your vote in the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week. Don't forget to use the comments section. We love reading comments. We love seeing your comments. And I'd like to know whether you prefer action figures or statues, or, you know, whether you like them both or neither. I know somebody said, I want to have everything.
Me too, man. Me too.
I don't. Where would you keep it?
In an everything place.
If I could afford to have everything, I could afford to keep everything.
You know, the problem is that, like with action figures, if you had everything, you would end up with 500 Batmans.
Well, that's kind of what my...
I'm fine with that.
That's kind of how my statue collection has ended up, because I was like, oh, these Batman Black and Whites are really cool. And I've got like almost every single one of them. I have to now... I've got so many of them, I'm picking and choosing which ones I want and don't want. So
too
many Batmans. Who would have thought that would have been a problem in my life 20 years ago?
raising hand over Yar. I need to buy all five copies of Legends of the Dark Knight number one, and I can't find a pink one.
I've got the pink one, the blue one, the yellow one, and I think what was the other one, the green one?
There's five of them. There's a pink, a blue, a yellow, a green, and I think one that's like off coffee.
No, I think there's only four.
Fuchsia.
Was that print run just them just like turning off one of the colors in the CMYK.
No, they had this weird wraparound cover that was colored a different color than the rest. But after you take off that wraparound cover, everything else was exactly the same.
They basically printed with a fifth color ink, but each one has a different fifth color ink.
Interesting.
So you get the big neons and the yellows and the blues and the greens and the purples and the fuchsias. And what's a good color?
Cyan.
Puce. Hey, listeners, head over. I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor this week, Tweaked Audio, for sponsoring this week's episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Tweaked Audio has some great earbuds, earphones, over-the-ear things. They've got all sorts of colors, all sorts of different styles. My favorite are the PB ones. You can get them with an optional microphone. And best of all, when you head over to tweakedaudio.com, use the checkout code MAJOR, and you're going to get 33% off your price. Thank you, Tweaked Audio, for sponsoring this week's episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Listeners, we kind of brought it up, and you said you wanted us to do it. So we are looking at the 4-issue Detective Comics arc, The Mud Pack.
Mud Pack!
The Mud Pack.
I'm not going to lie, I forgot that we'd even talked about this, and then I read the issues and I was like, oh yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah. Well, we had brought it up in passing, and then everybody was like, yeah, you guys should totally review that. And it's like, okay, here we go. Yeah. I remember, this is what'd you say, Matthew, 89?
89. This would have been the late summer 89.
So
it's
this
older
was
than me.
Right before I remember going to college, and I'm picking these up and just being amazed at the, was it Norm Breyfogle art cover art on these? I was just always like, wow, these are really cool. Here's Batman melting down. Here's Batman getting stabbed. And then reading this and going, well, I know who one of these clay faces is, but who are the rest of these guys?
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, that was kind of in the early 80s, actually about 85, 86 is when I started to get into comics. So I didn't have all of that back issue stuff. And so here we don't, not only do we get one clay face, we get 4 clay faces, or really 3. One of them really didn't come back that well after the crisis.
3 clay faces and a corpse.
Which is funny because they make a big point of bringing in Matt Hagen to try to revive him, and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then at least 2 other times in this arc, someone is saying he died during the crisis.
Yeah.
That's actually the linchpin of my thesis about this, four-issue arc.
Which is what?
The crisis.
Which is that, the crisis, and that Matt Hagen doesn't come back, that this is not actually a story. This is actually a structural ripple, a growth, basically the way that, you know, like a rainbow sheen forms on a puddle full of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is what this is because of the crisis. This is, you know, what the crisis did was it took all of these random weird things and it consolidated them by force into a DC universe that was, you know, quote unquote, more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what this is doing. This is kind of like this little like repeater robot doing the same thing to characters that weren't done that didn't happen in the crisis. Because by the end of this, we only have one functional clayface,
right?
Sort of.
Yeah.
That's still clayfacing anyway.
It's in a way, it's housekeeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and the reason Matt Hagen is in here is because Matt Hagen was, and to this day is, the highest profile clayface. Doing a clayface story and calling it Ultimate Clayface without at least name checking Matt Hagen would not work. I mean, Matt Hagen was in the cartoons, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it weird?
Matt Hagen was the clayface.
Isn't it weird that post-crisis, this is a totally quote unquote different universe and we end up getting the Ultimate Clayface?
I just kind of
laughed at that because I was like, oh, wow. I mean, here we have Marvel doing a whole Ultimate Universe in itself, and we can see that DC is like, yeah, we've got Ultimate Clayface here.
We're going to totally
trying to kick Batman's butt. So, Ashley, what is this story about? Can you give us a rundown really quick of what goes on in these crazy 4 issues?
I don't know if I can, to be completely honest. So the original Clayface's name isn't Boris Karloff, but it sounds like Boris Karloff.
Basil Carlo.
There you go. And he was like an actor guy, and he is not a Batman, and decides that he's going to collect all the other Clayfaces, including Matt Hagen, the guy whose name's supposed to start with P, and the
Preston
girl.
Payne.
See, that's how much impact the story had on me.
And Sandra Fuller, Clayface 4.
Yeah, who spends a lot of time kind of looking like Lois Lane, I guess.
Yeah.
And they try to take down Batman, and they don't win because it's Batman, and then there's only one Clayface left at the end.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
they don't win because of Looker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's her, the outsider.
Yeah.
Batman calls in the middle of the night, and her boobies are out.
Super minor character gets to be the hero who saves Batman. You gotta love 1989.
Yeah. So, Basil Carlo wants ultimate revenge. Now, he doesn't have the ability to morph and transform like the other Clayfaces do.
But he wears
them.
But he does wear a mask, and he was kind of like a master of disguise.
In his first appearance, he just wandered around with a knife and threatened to stab people.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of classic villains.
Yeah.
Well, it was the 40s.
And I gotta be honest, how they wrote Carlo in this is great, because he's just like half chewing the scenery, he's like Vincent Price.
Quintessential madman. Yes.
Yeah, he is. He's like Vincent Price on
Clayface.
Yeah, yeah, he really is. Because he's just like, once I was the most greatest actor of the world, and now people will remember me. Yeah, he's just totally crazy.
John Lovett says master thespian. Acting!
Martin Landau and Ed Wood. That's
yes.
Who he reminds me.
Yes, yes, very much so.
That is very cool.
So, in order to collect all the Clayfaces, they have to break Clayface 3, Preston Payne, out of prison.
Right.
That's
an
alliteration right there. And, of course, he is literally crazy.
Yes.
His Clayface ability is to actually melt people. He gets so agitated that he has to get the bad stuff out, and so he melts people and kills them.
Preston Payne is out of that same classic Detective Comics run from the 70s that gave us the Laughing Fish story. From Rogers. Marshall Rogers did the art, and Steve Englehart. And
I'm actually surprised that he's not the Clayface who has stuck around in the public consciousness, because to me, like, his power set is much more compelling than the rest of them.
And he is actually, well, until Carlo gets fully empowered, he is the most powerful and most dangerous of the Clayfaces,
right?
Because he's the only one who had a body count to speak of before this story. His whole deal is killing people because he can't help it. And for a while in the 80s, he was, as we saw at the beginning of this, married to a mannequin.
Yep.
Awesomely.
So that's... That's a thing.
With Clayface's 4's ability to transform and take other people's powers, they're able to capture Batman, Rodrigo, and make him watch a classic movie, which causes Batman to go crazy.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff happened in this book.
Jason Todd was in the... Well, sort of.
Yes.
For a minute.
Jason Todd is in the cover of something. You know, it's like... Yeah,
you know, I got so excited.
Yeah, I thought it'd been dead for a year by the time this came out.
And I remember when that issue dropped and saw that cover, I was like, what is this? Jason Todd's back. And then you get in there and you're like, she's just fooling and freaking him out.
They're clay faces. They change shape.
Yeah, you have to expect that.
But as Matthew said, Looker comes and saves the day.
Right. And gets a new costume that never appears again.
Even though Batman says, hey, I kind of like your new look.
Yeah. Nobody remembers it. You want to know how I remembered this costume?
How's that?
I didn't remember this costume either. Okay. Take a step back, sit down, and gasp like an old lady in a murder mystery. Ladies
oh, my. Clutch my pearls.
Oh, I did not remember that Looker had a new costume in this arc in 1989. And I'm not saying that to be self-aggrandizing. I'm saying that to say, if any schmuck in 1989 had enough time to sit at home and memorize Batman comics, I'm that guy.
Okay.
All right.
Really, what we find out is this wasn't necessarily a plan to kill Batman, but it was more of a plan for Carlo to take samples from 3 and 4 and transform himself into Ultimate Clayface, which is more along the lines with the Clayface that we see in the animated show.
Mm-hmm. Or as I like to call him, Poop Man.
Poop Man.
Which again is really just this idea that seems like the sort of idea a comic book company editor would have rather than necessarily a villain, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to get the powers of these 4 random individuals that all just kind of happen to share an alias.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's like trying to get the powers of Martin Short and Martin Van Buren. It's like, it's just like,
but it makes
perfect. What are you going to get?
Editorially, you have 4 different ideas of what Clayface should be.
Right.
Why don't we, in our new streamlined universe, combine them all into one, pretend this story didn't happen, and from now on, we'll just have one Clayface who embodies all that ever was Clayface.
Right.
He'll be the quintessential Clayface, if you will.
Well, and I think that's obviously what they're doing, except that they made one mistake. Well, they made a big mistake in the story, as far as I'm concerned, in that Clayface 3 has been trying to find true love, always wants to find true love. Yeah. And of course, he finds it in the form of Clayface 4,
which
proves that, you know, doesn't matter how you look on the outside. They're going to love you for you, and they get big smooches at the end. And so they live kind of happily ever after for these two characters, at least up until they have their kid, Clayface 5.
Whose name, by the way, Cassius Clay.
Is that what the name was?
Okay. That is not a joke. The character's name is Cassius Payne, and they called him Cassius Clay.
Yeah. That's awful.
This is why I don't... Comics, you suck sometimes, comics.
Oh, comics.
So that was the weirdest part, because that new Clayface that came later just didn't do anything.
Well, it's okay. Matt Hagen is back.
Yeah.
In the new DCU post the flashy point. This, by the way, is 3 Universal resets ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a fun story.
It is. It's silly fun. And, you know, as much as I like Basil Carlo just chewing the scenery and screaming about acting at the top of his voice. There is one line in here that was just like a elbow to the rib, ga ha 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 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Batman is trying to track where the Clayfaces are going to attack next. And of course, it's at the Gotham Plaza casino night. And he says to himself, bingo, if I had a dollar for every hunch that paid off, I'd be as rich as Bruce Wayne. And it's just seriously, Batman, come on. You're making jokes to yourself.
Alan Grant is really underrated as a plotter for me. I'm not always 100% on board with his dialogue, as that might have shown. But I really love the way Alan Grant plots a story, because he has – it's almost this no-nonsense approach. It's this theory of, well, this is a universe that should make some sort of sense. And so we're going to take that most coherent idea and we're going to just smack it into shape. We're going to punch it in the face until this plot is where it needs to be.
We're going to make it malleable.
Norm Breyfogle is going to draw guys all over it.
I mean, it is just like, here are all the pieces, literally all the pieces, and we are going to make them fit. By the end of these 4 issues.
Into place.
And the crazy thing is, it is 4 issues. And they packed so much into 4 issues.
It's like 90 pages. And man, there's a lot that gets done.
Because there's not 3 pages of adverts in every single issue.
True. And there's also, this is a point where, and I've said this before, I really kind of like the comics of the late 80s going into about 1993, because the focus is on serialized storytelling without the focus becoming so much on tying everything together and numbering the covers and making sure that all 5 of the Batman books have a coherent theme and tone and that it's all about the same thing. This was a point where Alan Grant could still go off and do this thing. And then, of course, the next issue has Anarchy in it.
I was going to say that is the next appearance of Anarchy.
Yeah, I love Anarchy. And at this point in time, these 4 issues represent A, how do we fix the logistical problem of Clayface? B, how can we make it exciting for 90 pages? And C, and this is the important bit, make me care about three random minor villains.
Right.
Because even Carlo in this is massively charismatic. I love Carlo. And when you get to the end of this, there's this little part of you. Basil Carlo is now this crazy ultimate Clayface, and he's going to burn through the entire earth, and he's a crazy Clayface.
Better call
and
China.
You root for him. There's a part of us that is with Clayface at the end of this story going, go, Basil Carlo, go. You had to remake your own movie, and now you can take it out on the world. Yes, get your revenge. And then you start to think maybe you should get some help and talk to your therapist. But more importantly, even Lady Clay, who had had one appearance before this, who was a minor part of a group of villains in a Batman and the Outsiders annual, she gets character. She gets nuance. She gets a love story. She doesn't do as much as the other Clay faces, but she gets a little bit of an arc here.
Well, I think she does more than any of the Clay faces.
Because she does half the recruiting by fooling the other Clay faces into getting in there. You know?
And like, she's the one that frames Batman by going out as Batman.
Yeah, I guess
none of
right.
it is her plan, though.
No,
she's following someone else's plan.
Sure, no, absolutely, absolutely. But she's the workhorse of the team.
She has the powers. She has the useful powers.
Yeah, you know, the good ones.
Matt Hagen is basically just a homunculus leaning on a stick, and Preston Payne's got a bag over his face. He's useless.
Ashley, what did you like about this story?
I liked the weirdness of it all because, like I said. Like, I got, like, halfway through, and I was like, I don't know if I know what's happening. I don't know if I know what anyone's name is, but I'm having a good time. I think it's the kind of story that appeals to people, not unlike myself, who really like their Batman and really enjoy their weird Batman and their side villains that they've never heard of before.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're not that person, it might be a little tougher to get behind.
Maybe. Rodrigo,
I also had no idea that there were that many Clayfaces.
Oh yeah, Rodrigo, what did you like about this story?
I like that it was pretty weird. I mean, this story invites you to not take it seriously, even though it like tries to do that thing where it's like we are going to deconstruct Batman through his brains. Like, it's just like now they're just like kind of borrowing the Scarecrow stuff. I don't know. It's just like there's a lot of like obviously a lot of fun was had putting this issue together. I feel kind of bad that I think at times it is trying to play it straight and it doesn't work. But also, I mean, just as a comics reading experience, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I don't remember Looker. Once I thought about it, I'm like, she's that one chick. But I'm like, you know, I don't remember. I didn't remember Looker. I didn't remember Lady Clay or anything like that. So it's like, no characters to kind of get moved up in your brain and look at and have fun with.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the art, Rodrigo? Did you like the art? This is Norm Breyfogel, who does some pretty crazy Batman stuff.
Yeah, I liked it. I think, you know, from pretty early on, it's like the expressions are big and like everything's kind of a little bit exaggerated. So very early on, you're well, eventually, you do know this is a thing about Clayface, right?
Right.
So eventually we're going to get some pretty crazy art here. And we do. And it's good. It's like there's that actually one of the best ones is like Batman like has a we'll say Clayface. Batman has Clayface like by the collar and he's like warping his face and he's like, bah, like super demented. Great panel.
I think what's neat about Breyfogel's art, especially Batman kind of suffers from the Iron Man and Spider-Man syndrome where he's got these supposedly white fixed eyes. Yet he can emote so much through the eyes just by exaggerating them so much that it really comes off really kind of neat. I kind of forgot how much I kind of like the gray and the blue suit of the late 80s, early 90s before it went completely black. The one thing I don't miss at all is the horrible Batmobile.
I love that Batmobile.
This Batmobile is the most atrocious. It looks like a chunk of brick driving down the street.
A Roomba with wings, baby. It is a cool Batmobile.
It is awful.
I mean, It's not a good Batmobile, but it's a cool
I'm going to have to now go back to the Jim Lee Batman, that big, what was it, 5-page fold out that he did of the Batcave that had like every Batmobile in there.
Yeah, yeah.
To see if I can see if this one is in there, because this one is blah. It's Ashley, awesome. did you like the art?
I liked it for the most part. The thing that I did notice is I think it's in the second issue when Lady Clay is disguised as Batman to frame mm-hmm. him. There's a knockdown drag out fight, and it's all these big wide slaps across the whole panel, and that's like very cool to see. But every background is just a bunch of yellow.
Yeah.
There's no backgrounds on any of the close-ups. And then when you do get a background out of him, they're amazing and they're detailed and they're interesting to look at. But because that's something that, you know, the detail of like every panel is very detailed is such a thing now.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, where are all the, we're just yellow.
Yeah,
okay. And then I tried to be like, is that indicative of something? And I'm just like, no, I'm just pretty sure it's just yellow.
No, it's just they can't fill up that panel. There are still issues today that do that, that when I see it, I complain about it too. It's like, come on, you guys fill in the background. Give me some depth. I don't need to see them up against a green screen.
I mean, I'll give you like two or three of them, but when it's like most of the page, it's mm-hmm. really just striking that you've just used a color. So mm-hmm. that'd be my only argument. And I think that happens. I mean, you're right. It still happens today, but I think it happens more with older books.
Right. Exactly. Matthew, what is there not to like about this book?
I can't think of anything.
I'm sure Rodrigo has a few things then.
Oh, go ahead, Matthew. Did you have something?
I think that probably the only weakness of it is the reason that I love it. This is an 80s comic. And that means, you know, Zach and Rodrigo have said repeatedly, these 80s comics and their walls of words and all this stuff and the thing, and people are just talkity, 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 talkity. Mm-hmm. That's in here. And the fact that we're trying to use this story, and again, a cool story, to really put together origins from 1940 and 1961 and 1978 and 1987 and turn them into a cohesive tale. That can definitely feel like work if you are not fully into it. I was. Not everybody would be.
Yeah. Rodrigo, what did you not like?
I guess, you know, the problem with this arc is that it's not, like I said before, it's not actually a story. It's kind of a spreadsheet. It's a spreadsheet that kind of all of the equations lead you down to what we want Clayface to be from here on out. Now, it's a spreadsheet that's made out of things that people that like comics already find interesting. So I think, you know, someone like Matthew approaching this as like, I know who all these guys are. I know what Batman's about. I know all this stuff. He can get into it. He can read it. It's like reading The Matrix. But if you're not, like, you just approach this. This is, like, pretty difficult to get into. It's weird. It's so weird. It's so comic book weird. And at the end, is it actually satisfying? Kind of not. Not as a story, because they were trying to accomplish something different. They weren't trying to write a satisfying story. They were trying to make it so that people later would be able to write satisfying stories with Clayface in them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ashley, what about you?
I kind of agree with everything that's been said. And it is, I mean, it's no Chris Claremont, but it's definitely a different storytelling style. And sometimes, I mean, for me, because I didn't grow up on it, it takes a minute to drop into that.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can see. I have not read this in 20 plus years. So,
yeah,
it takes a moment to readjust.
Yeah. And like I said, I think if you're not a Bat person, with at least, like, I have just a very passing knowledge of who Clayface is. It was mm-hmm. apparently much more in-depth than I thought. I think without even that, it's probably fairly inaccessible.
Here's what I think is probably the best thing about this entire series, is that, what are we, 20 years later? Almost?
Mm-hmm. More than that.
More than that.
89? Yeah. 27 years
later? 27 years later, you say the Mud Pack. And there are people like, oh, yeah, I know who the Mud Pack are, or at least are aware enough that there were multiple Clayfaces that teamed up. And that is the weirdest thing, because we mentioned it in passing as a poll of the week, as an off comment. People were like, yeah, you guys should review it. You should talk about this, and that it's available and that people still can have fun with this by the end, I think is kind of the staying power of this weird four-issue Detective Comics story arc.
Got that mud pack in there, my eye.
Yeah, and you know, when you got a closing thing that says, you know, the villain is falling out the window and he's screaming at Batman as he's falling to the center of the earth, "You'll pay for this, Batman, I swear." And then he's melting through, "You'll pay." It's just good, crazy. I mean, it's good, crazy fun. And so if you get a chance, if you want to check it out,
you totally should.
This is pretty typical post-crisis, this is not pre-Batman movie.
Yeah, barely.
Just barely pre-Batman movie. So if you're wanting to get that little slice of the 4 years before the Batman movie came out and totally changed the Batman comics, totally, I think this is a fairly good representation of that time period.
Oh yeah, this is pure early post-crisis. And I mean that in the most adoring way, because some of the stories that came out of 87, 88, 89 became the new status quo. I mean, this has a lot of influence, this arc specifically, but Death in the Family, a lot of the things that came in there, Wally West as the Flash came out of that same time period, the revamping of the Teen Titans after the new Teen Titans of 1980. All of this stuff that we're still seeing now today running around in the post-Flashpoint universe, chunks of it, big chunks of it, come out of the 1987, out of this time frame, and for good reason. These are people who, yeah, I think that part of the point behind this is, how do we get all of our Clayface streamlined into one good Clayface? But then you sit down and read it, and it's kind of a rollicking Encyclopedia Brown adventure. And I'm totally on board with that. I love it when the story can be fun, but also serve a purpose of maybe, I don't know, killing a blue beetle.
Yeah.
You know, if it's something you got to do, you got to do. And we all know it. And we understand the monetary realistic IPs and Condors Inferno and corporate defrassum and doodle bopper. But what it really comes down to is, do I remember reading this book and having fun? And the answer is, Norm Ray Fogle Batman with the big square ears.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Rodrigo, for joining us this week. Rodrigo, anything you want to close out with?
Yes. I'm very interested as to what this Comic Bento thing is.
It is a comic book subscription service where basically they're sending you trade paperbacks, a collection of trade paperbacks every month. You can find out more at comicbento.com.
Nice. How very strange. Very interesting.
Yep. You can also check out The Tale of Tallest Rabbit over at Amazon right now. In the time that we have recorded this, Rodrigo, you have now broken the top 500 in books, and you are number 6 in the children's books, fairy tales, folk tales, and myths category.
I believe I am, in fact, number 1 in the Canadian Kindle for stories.
Awesome.
Nice.
Ashley Victoria Robinson, anything that you'd like to say before we get out of here this week?
Watch The Red Shirt Diaries, www.theredshirtdiaries.com. We go to all kinds of different realities. We meet people from TNG.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah. We've been sitting on that joke for a long time. Yes, Scott Mance from Access Hollywood and Tiffany Smith from DC All Access show up. And listen to Geek History Lesson. We talk about Martian Manhunter.
Yes, excellent. Very good episode this week. I'm all caught up on my podcast, so now I don't have to say I'm about 2 weeks behind Ashley. I'm actually listened to that this morning. So I saw your
tweet. You were looking for more stuff to listen to.
Yeah, I know. And there's some good ones. I think I'd listened to The Moth on and off before was one that you had mentioned. But I'm just surprised at the number of podcasts that people have mentioned to me that I have listened to and have completely caught up on, like the Andy Daly podcast. I think there's only 8 of those anyway, so.
It's so good, though. Yeah,
it's funny. The only thing is, and this is what I'll say, and I kind of mentioned this in a tweet, and I'm not trying to be a dick about it, but if you're going to recommend a podcast, please don't recommend your podcast because it comes with bias attached to it. And so it's funny when people are like, yeah, you should listen to this podcast. And I click on their name and it's like co-host of the such and such podcast that they just recommended to me. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to listen to it. So if you want to recommend a podcast to me, certainly do that at majorspoilers.com on Twitter. And I think that there's not bias attached. I mean, there's certainly a bias attached to it, but it comes from a different place when you're saying you should go and listen to someone else's podcast, which I think makes it a little bit more important for me to want to go and check out. So I did find a couple of new ones this week. So thank you, everybody, for that. And thank you, Ashley, for sharing your podcast with me. Matthew, I cannot wait until next week. When the Flashback podcast returns, you can check that out at members.majorspoilers.com. You can also check out Matthew's 10 things that he does on Twitter on a mostly everyday basis.
Well, as long as the child isn't sick, I'm shooting for 5 a week because I've got like, I don't know, maybe 9,000-10,000 things in my head.
You can follow him at Mighty King Cobra. And of course, you can check us out at majorspoilers.com on the website. And until next time, when we'll come back, I think we have something scheduled. I'm trying to get an interview scheduled. I don't know if it'll work out quite right, but if not, we'll be back with something really cool and pop culture-y and comic booky, because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of a Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. I might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the Middle East with a king sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.